Hey, Fem Radio. This is Melissa Goncalves, your host of the Fem Radio podcast, joined by my co-star of the week, Bianca Reyes, creator of Oh So Fashionably Late. We're so excited to be bringing you the final installment of our Love Chats discussion during the week of Valentine's Day by having our guest, Dr. Shannon Chavez, here to talk all things sex, intimacy, and answering those burning questions that you've been sending to us. Dr. Shannon, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Super excited to get started. I know our listeners are going to be just dying to understand your background. So as far as an agenda for this episode, we're going to go through a lovely background, get into some deep discussion topics for intimacy and romance for Valentine's Day. And then we're going to jump into the highly requested Q&A from our listeners. So Dr. Shannon, again, thank you so much for joining us. Please introduce yourself. Let us know who you are and what you do.
I'm a licensed psychologist, a certified sex therapist with a private practice in Beverly Hills. I offer individual and couples therapy. I'm also a sex coach. I do sex coaching, education, workshops, basically all things sexuality. And my private practice is called Shape Center, Sexual Health and Pleasure Enhancement. So I cover all of that related to sexual health and wellness.
And what prompted you to explore this industry?
Great question. I love when I get that question because I feel like every time I answer that question, it's always connected back to my interest in sex. I feel like it's a big part of why we're all here. It's also something that's very taboo. I grew up in a conservative religious family, Catholic upbringing, and so I knew from a very young age it made people uncomfortable. And I wanted to get into work with couples and realize that a lot of psychologists like myself were uncomfortable talking about sex. So because I was so comfortable talking about it and also knew what it was like for people who grew up around shame and had discomfort talking about it, it was just a career born in all of that. So, that's how I got into it. And it's been my specialty ever since.
I really like that because I find it, so interesting to think that there are people, right? Because I feel so uncomfortable talking about it at times. And I love that there are people who are so comfortable. So I know that there's a way to get to that point. So I look forward and hopefully having you guide me on that tour throughout this episode. But you offer individual and couple sessions as well as sex therapy, coaching, workshops. What typically prompts a person to look into sex therapy?
I think it starts with a sexual concern or problem, and they range from all areas of the spectrum around sexuality. So it can be something specific around sexual dysfunction, and that can be things like orgasm difficulties, problems with arousal, sometimes other mental health issues that are interfering with sexual health. And then also on the other end of the spectrum is areas that people just want to improve or fine-tune in their own sexual life. So that may be we're looking for ways to spice up our sex life, or we've had a baby and we're trying to get that rhythm back in our sex life together. So there's a whole range of issues. The interesting thing is a lot of people I work with have done zero therapy, and so this is their first time working in therapy. So I love that I get a lot of first timers and that they kind of dive right into sex therapy as their first, experience in psychotherapy.
This is Bianca here chiming in. So how does one go about booking an appointment with you?
I always start with a complimentary consultation over the phone. And the reason why I do that is I want to make sure, one, that a potential new client is a good fit for my practice, and also to make sure that if there are questions that someone has before booking the appointment, to find out what type of service might be best. So I always love those consults over the phone because it can break the ice. So by the time we make an appointment together to do our first session, there's already a rapport and a comfort. So since we are talking about sex and it is uncomfortable for most people, that it's already a safe space and they already have an idea of my style and my approach to working with these issues. And it goes from there. And people can book appointments right through my website and also schedule a consultation through the website as well, which is drshannonchavez.com.
That's probably a really great idea too. It might almost help the person feel a bit more comfortable because they're not exactly sitting across from you during that consultation. It's over the phone. So they might be a little bit more open to talking about things that they might feel uncomfortable in person. We did receive, of course, a ton of questions that we're going to get to, but for the purpose of our discussions on love, we wanted to ask for your advice and opinion on things to do with, you know, increasing intimacy in the bedroom.
I love this. I think this is something that applies to everyone that's in a relationship, or even if you're single and thinking about your own relationship with your own body. I think intimacy starts with you first, knowing what you want and need. And when it comes to improving it in the bedroom, I think you have to have solid communication with a partner. So we'll focus on partnered intimacy first. And I think communication is important because there's always two perspectives on what should be a priority, what are your values around intimacy. And so before you start diving into trying out new things or figuring out how to resolve certain problems, you want to make sure that you have that solid base of communication. And I bring up people that aren't in a relationship because I think that there's also a lot of focus in our culture on coupleship, you know, being in a relationship and finding a partner. And I think that it puts a lot of pressure on people to think of intimacy as something that has to be shared with a partner. But the way I tend to approach it with my clients is to think about, you know, the relationship that you have with your own body, the longest relationship we have in life. So before, you know, let's say you're thinking about a relationship and you're not currently in a relationship, you want to focus on what is, you know, your relationship with your body and also what you need, being able to identify some of those pieces first before thinking about approaching that with a partner. So I always focus on self-development first before partnered intimacy.
And this is Bianca. So let's start with romance. How can you build more romance into the bedroom? Is romance for Valentine's Day kind of played out?
I think that's such a great question. You know, romance is subjective. So for some people, that's flowers and hearts and passion. And for other people, romance may be, you know, your partner cleaning up the house or, you know, doing the dishes. So I think it's really subjective. And if you want to bring more romance into sex, I think you want to think about what that means for you first. And sometimes we have expectations around romance, but we don't really know how to ask for what we want. So again, communication. If you're not able to talk about that with a partner, you end up getting disappointed if romance isn't there. And so you want to be able to say, look, I want more of this. Or when you, let's say your love language is, you know, gifts or, you know, thoughtful affirmations or compliments. I think you want to be able to ask for what you want in order to feel that sense of romance. And let's face it, we all have experienced romance based on what we have learned romance is, whether that's the fairy tales or the knight in shining armor, or even all of the, you know, things we see in the media around romance. So I don't think it's necessarily played out, but there can be so much focus on it that it builds pressure. And then it leads to disappointment if we don't experience it the way that we feel it should be versus what we really want. So that's why I say figure out what it means for you first. And that may be a better way to actually get those needs met and not feel that disappointment.
I feel like romance is sort of, for some reason, like reserved for special occasions.
Right.
It is. You're absolutely right. So birthdays, anniversaries, holidays. And I think we should actually have a little bit of romance every single day. And back to intimacy, that's what I recommend for my couples, daily intimate practice. And that can be, you know, touching. It can be, you know, gratitudes. It can be talking about things other than how was your day. That is the biggest romance killer, I think, of all, is this loaded question where you just start downloading all of the things that went wrong rather than maybe changing that to something more like, what was something that made you really proud today? Or, you know, what's going on in your life that you're really excited about? So we can always change that to create more connection. And I think that's really what romance is. It's intimate connection where you're getting emotional intimacy and maybe some physical intimacy too, even outside of sex. But, you know, touching.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I love how you mentioned sort of the how was your day, right? Because then we always end up even, you know, killing a mood if the mood is there. So, like, let me just talk for an hour about how miserable my meetings were today.
Exactly. And we talk way too much about everything other than sex. So the kids, finances, work, and all of those things are drainers, energy drainers versus energy boosters. And I think talking about things that we're proud of or that, you know, things that are going on in our life that are exciting, you know, that's what really charges us. And that's what libido is all about, that life force, that charge. And that's what we should be sharing with our partners, not all of that other stuff that really is irrelevant if you think about it.
Right. So what would be your piece of advice for someone who has a partner who maybe is not very intimate or romantic? You know, what are some ways to maybe gradually introduce them to that way of life, you know, and they can start on Valentine's Day so that they don't frighten their partner? Some light ways to introduce romance.
I think first, think about your love language. I've always loved the love languages. And if you're not familiar with the five love languages, it can be acts of service, physical touch, words of affirmation. And these types of love languages are important because that's how you get your needs met. And it's also how you feel loved and cared for. And I think that's what romance is all about. Romantic gestures really show that someone cares about you and that you care about someone else. So sometimes we tend to give what we want to receive. So that may be a way to start out is, let's say you feel like, you know, you like to make dinner for your partner, or you write little love notes and leave them where your partner can find them. Think about why that feels so good for you. And maybe that's what you're looking to receive more of, and you can communicate that. And I think sometimes going over the top is fun. And the reason why I say that and over the top can be, you know, something really creative or thinking outside of the box. Creativity also tends to be connected to our sexuality. It helps us get into that more emotional part of our brain. So I think that that can be a good place to start with romance. And if you feel completely lost around where do I start, find some books and ideas. I think you can go even, you know, Googling, you know, romantic ideas, things that can just be a place to start that can start, you know, brainstorming and get you thinking about romance in a different way and not putting so much pressure on yourself to have it all figured out. Because let's face it, nobody has it all figured out. I don't even have it all figured out. And I do this work every single day. So we don't want to put that pressure on ourselves that we've got to have it all figured out and that it looks anything like the movies. I always say Hollywood's version of sex and romance is just completely unrealistic. It never looks that glamorous. It's never that easy. So we should definitely be more easy on ourselves and realistic around what romance is all about.
Agreed. I know Bianca and I have actually spoke about the love languages before because we're huge proponents of it. So I think that I would totally echo in your sentiments. I think that was a really great place where my boyfriend and I started because we were starting to see, like, I don't think that we accept love in the same ways. And he's very much acts of service. I'm words of affirmation. So I need to hear things in order to believe or, you know, and feel a certain type of way. Whereas, like, I could cook him dinner and he suddenly feels all the love in the world. So it was really great to be able to see that. So I definitely recommend that as well for our listeners to take that. And if you have a partner who you think would find that corny and not buy into it, then maybe just randomly ask them the questions throughout the day.
Exactly. I like that. Just kind of exactly do your own assessment and then be like, ah, okay, I've got it. I know what their love language is. Exactly. I feel like some men, and I don't want to call all men out or generalize, but there's also this stigma that men can't be romantic and have a love language and they've got to be these tough guys all the time. But yeah. The reality is, you know, emotional intimacy has nothing to do with gender. You know, love is our first emotion in life that we feel. So it's not something that we should shy away from. I think culture and society tends to discourage men from kind of tapping into, you know, their love languages because of, you know, it doesn't encourage them as much as it does females to kind of understand love in a way where there's more permission around exploring it and not feeling that it has anything to do with your masculinity. And I think we've got to get over some of that stigma or discomfort around how we view love.
Agreed. Agreed. So now we'll segue into Q&A from listeners, and you can hear it in my voice. I'm so excited.
Here. I've been getting people sliding into my DMs, emailing me. I'm excited to get answers to their questions.
I know, even right now, I just got a DM asking a question, so I'm cracking up. So obviously there's a common theme across the board that sex is super taboo. You know, like parents struggle to talk about it with their kids. People struggle to talk about it with their friends and family. Even speaking to doctors, it's hard to speak about what you're experiencing. Why do you think that continues to happen even in 2021, where you see the world is shifting, becoming a little bit more progressive in certain areas? And, you know, a lot of people are very sex positive. Why do you think that's still such a societal taboo?
I think there is mixed messages around sexuality as a whole. There's still such a lack of sex education. So even though we may see these messages constantly, you know, from commercials to social media, a lot of people don't have proper education. So they don't really know what's normal, what's okay, what's appropriate. And I think that there's also this idea that there are norms around sex. So people, if they don't fit within what they perceive as a norm, there's a lot of shame around it. I think shame is the number one reason that sex remains taboo. And we also really don't have the language to talk about sexuality. And that includes, you know, using appropriate words for our body parts. I always tell my clients, you know, we wouldn't call a foot anything but a foot, but we have probably, I think there was a study that showed over 500 plus different terms that people use for genitals. And it's unbelievable. So we have, you know, such a discomfort with even calling our genitals, you know, the words that they are. So I think that leads to not only discomfort and shame, but just an avoidance around sex. And that leads to people feeling unprepared when they are in sexual relationships, and then also isolated when they are having sexual issues, which creates more shame and even more, you know, self-judgment and not feeling prepared to deal with and navigate all of the issues we all deal with as sexual beings.
That's a very interesting point, because I even think about when I was a kid, right? You know, and Bianca, I'm not sure if you could relate, but like if I had said the word vagina and penis around my parents, it might as well have been I just said the F word, you know? It was like, it's like a bad word, but it's true. It's what's different between saying like knee, foot, eye, you know, saying vagina and penis, and it's suddenly such a bad word. But it really is just a body part. It's just connected to obviously something that people frown upon doing at a young age, I guess.
Yeah, I don't think I ever thought of like the nicknames that we have for them. And you're right, you wouldn't call it, you know, a foot or an elbow or anything else a different name than it really is.
Meanwhile, we have a question here that I was writing in, and it was like lady parts. So I'm like, oh crap.
Oh, I know. Those are my biggest pet peeves. Lady parts, you know, down there, when I hear a client say, you know, down there, I go, down where? I mean, we could go a long ways between, you know, from the belly button down. So where are we talking down there? But that's, you know, there's just so much so much shame. And it's interesting because even in the, you know, the mid 50s, you couldn't even say pregnancy on TV. So here we are now in 2021 and, you know, saying vagina and some of these, you know, names that are body parts or natural parts of sexuality are still not allowed on television and are censored. And it's just unbelievable. It's definitely holding us back. So every time I feel like we're making strides ahead, I feel like we've still got a long way to go.
Yeah.
I think we come from a generation that is, you know, that's when they started pushing sex ed in schools. But now I think there's more of a push for kids to learn about consent. Mm-hmm. And so it kind of goes hand in hand. So I think it's changing. Like, it was a good push to get sex ed in schools to begin with, and now they need to change the direction that they're going in and take it a step further and talk about the important issues. That way these children can grow up and be responsible adults and, you know, take other people's feelings into account and find out really what consent means. The whole thing about, you know, just because she didn't say no doesn't mean it's a yes, that kind of thing.
I think that's so important. I support that work 100% because and I think the younger the better. I think we wait until we think it's relevant for kids to have or need sex education. But I think it should be, you know, happening earlier and earlier because of exposure to material. I mean, kids have YouTube now and the internet and they can access this material. So it's better to have that education and learn the appropriate topics, and whether it's consent or intimacy skills, rather than getting it from other sources that are not reliable and not accurate.
Right.
So I know we had a few questions that sort of fall under this realm, and that pertains to your mind in the bedroom. So how does your mind affect you as an individual, you know, your sex drive, maybe even if we were to get deeper into it, right? Like as far as it goes to getting wet, like your body's actual reaction to being turned on, how strong does your mind play a part in that?
Oh, the mind is a huge component. My whole practice is about mind-body work. Because what you're thinking, how you're perceiving sex, your thoughts, beliefs affect everything that's going on in your body. So for example, if you're feeling that I'm not going to get any enjoyment out of sex, or I'm just not going to be able to get turned on, your body and nervous system are impacted by those thoughts. So that's how powerful the mind is. The mind influences what's going on in the body. And it's also important because the mind can be an instigator of other experiences like anxiety or stress around sex. And that can affect your ability to get relaxed and to enjoy pleasure. And sometimes those mental barriers or blocks can cause things like pain or discomfort. So I think that it's a huge component. And getting turned on, I think, absolutely starts in the mind first. That's where we want to start, because you can get aroused physically, but if you're not feeling that mental connection and turn on, then it's going to be a disconnect from mind and body, and it's not going to be an enjoyable experience for you or for your partner.
So this is Bianca here with a question from someone. It says, do men have a greater sex drive than women, or is it just an illusion that Hollywood gives us?
I'm going to blame Hollywood on that one again. So it's absolutely an illusion. If anything, it's different for everyone. And I think there's a lot of factors that affect drive. So it has nothing to do with gender. I think that that's a belief that we hear from such a young age that men are more sexual, that it creates a lot of shame in men that are dealing with low libido. And also, it makes women feel like something's wrong with them if they do have a greater sex drive than a partner. So I think that it's important to just understand all the factors that affect drive. But again, I think it's something that both men and women can experience. And there's no shame in having a high sex drive, as long as you know how to enjoy it in a consensual and safe way.
Let's see. Is it normal to be 30 and have not reached an orgasm with a sexual partner? What would your advice be for this person?
Yes, it is normal. And the important thing to know about orgasm is that it's not something we're born being able to do. It is a learned response. So if you haven't masturbated early in life or learned how your body responds to arousal and sexual stimulation, then it's going to be more difficult to experience orgasm. So what I do in my practice is something called orgasm coaching. And I always recommend that if a woman hasn't experienced orgasm with a partner, that she starts with solo practice and self-stimulation so she can start priming her body for partnered sex. And also learn what she likes, because sometimes not being able to reach an orgasm with a partner is because sex is too intercourse focused, and less than 10% of women can orgasm from intercourse. The main source of orgasm response for most females is clitoral stimulation. So I think that, you know, my advice would be priming your body, learning what feels good, and not focusing too hard on reaching that orgasm with a partner before you learn what feels good for you. And I think then you can get your partner on board and inform your partner how to create that environment for an orgasm to happen.
I did not know that. It's less than 10% of women. Wow.
It's incredible, right? I mean, I mean, if you think about everything from pornography to, again, film, what we see is, you know, women having these mind-blowing orgasms from intercourse. And if we think about it, the most intercourse on average is about a 5-minute activity, sometimes longer. So it's such a small part of the whole sexual equation that most women get their orgasmic response or the most stimulation from foreplay. So intercourse is just overrated, in my opinion, and too much of a focus. And I think that's what kills a lot of women's desire for sex, is the focus on orgasm, or a male partner's focus, too much penis focus. So they're focusing too much on, you know, my penis is the main source of pleasure. And what I usually tell, you know, male partners is you have 3 sets of sexual organs, your mouth, your hands, and your genitals. So if your partner is not experiencing orgasm, maybe trying some other form of stimulation and getting over your penis. Sorry, guys, I had to say it.
I'm going to print that on our next merch launch. Get over your penis.
Just in time for Valentine's Day. Yes.
I love it. And that actually, so this is like a perfect interjection. I'm just going to throw in the one question that I got in a DM just now. And I actually have heard this before, and I'm not sure why I didn't think to add this prior to, but I have, you know, a few friends, right, that are single, and they'll go out and they'll obviously meet people and they'll want to have sex and totally consensual, but they don't know how to ask a stranger, right, for what they're looking for. So they just sort of go with the vibe, and then it'll be, you know, obviously he gets off and they don't. So what would be your advice to just sort of throw it out there without feeling, because I think a lot of it is the feeling that as women, we don't want to be demanding, or we don't want to appear a certain way, like, oh no, touch me there, don't touch me there. What would be your advice for people like that who just maybe don't have the comfort of a long-term relationship or that level of confidence to sort of ask those questions?
Well, I think one, you need to know that you are responsible for your own orgasm. You know, I think there's also this myth that a partner is going to give you an orgasm. So when it doesn't happen and you're not able to ask for what you want, we think that that's okay. You know, it's okay, or, you know, maybe next time. But I think we want to just get good at asking for what you want. And if you don't know what you want, I think that's where it starts, you know, knowing what you really want. Even in casual hookups, you want to go into sex knowing, what am I okay with? What am I not okay with? What are my boundaries? And I think that's where it starts, is being able to develop a sense of control in sex. And I think assertiveness takes practice. So if you feel like you're not assertive on the first try, then, you know, at least giving yourself permission to learn and to practice that communication. And what better way to practice that than with a partner that you're not committed to, because there's no investment of feelings other than, you know, that enjoyment of casual, you know, a night of casual sex. So I think it's a good place to practice. And you can always practice with your friends. Say, hey, what would this sound like? Or I want to just practice saying this out loud and having, you know, a girl's night where you just kind of throw it out together and get that support of your friends saying, yeah, that sounds great. Or that's what I would say. Or talk to your friends about it openly. And that will build the confidence as well. I think sometimes we just have to get comfortable saying the things that we want and develop that language.
Right. So we got a few questions regarding introducing things into the bedroom. So incorporating toys, lube, and then bondage play, BDSM. Obviously, a few questions surrounding these topics, but what would you say is the best way to maybe incorporate using toys and lube? And then I think, and just from my own opinion, but you know better, I feel like a step above that would be like bondage and BDSM. But if it's all in the same thing, then just correct me.
Well, I think it's definitely stages. So BDSM is a lifestyle, and it can also be, alternative ways to play in a sexual space. And before I would go into that step, I would start with maybe identifying things that you would want to bring into that type of play. So even with bondage play, you may have certain equipment, props. You want to design your experience with a partner before just experimenting right away. So that requires communication. Even with sex toys, I think there are so many devices out there. And I think for some partners, it can be intimidating to bring toys in. There may be certain expectations. How are we going to use this? What parts of the body are we using it on? So I would say having a lot of open communication first. That way you both feel comfortable and you can go in feeling at ease and you can feel comfortable exploring. I think that if you're not used to using toys, you want to start small and you can always build up. I always say start with something simple like a handheld external device and massager that you can use on both partners' body and then move up to the more, techie or complicated devices that can be fun for both partners. But start small and you can always upgrade. I think with a lubricant, I feel like it should be on everyone's nightstand no matter what. It's something that can prevent sexual issues. It's something that can help create more comfort with sex. And it's also a moisturizer. So it's good for, for lack of lubrication and dryness happens. It's not something that we want to feel ashamed of. And you want to be prepared, whether you're introducing a toy or lubricant or anything like that. So have everything ready before going into your sexual experience together. That way you're not fumbling around or ruining the moment because you're not ready.
Yeah, I think from some of the questions that we received, it was that there was the implication that if you ask your partner to use lube, then, you know, they're not doing a good enough job or, you know, they're not getting you wet.
Right. There is a lot of stigma around that. And I think there's so many things that can cause vaginal dryness. Birth control is one. Antihistamines are another. Stress is a big factor. So there are just things that we're doing on a daily that may be affecting dryness. And it has nothing to do with adequate stimulation or lack of attraction. I think we start to internalize what it means. But if we normalized it, especially in our culture around, you know, dryness happens and it's not something to be ashamed of, then you can use products and not feel any, concern around it, but normalize it. I think of lube as the face cream of the vagina. You know, we use so many products for our, you know, beauty routines, but then when it comes to lube, a lot of women feel so ashamed around it. But I always look at it as an enhancer, and there's just a lot of great lubes out there. I mean, some are stimulating gels. You have oil-based, water-based, silicone-based. I mean, you can basically find a lubricant for any scenario. So I think you can have a lot of fun with finding products that you really like, that smell good, and that have all the right ingredients. So that's something that hopefully will help people get excited about using lubricant.
I love that. You moisturize your face, don't you?
Exactly. And you wouldn't put just anything on your face. So you also don't want to just get some quick over-the-counter thing. You want to know what the right product is for your body, because sometimes, you know, we're more sensitive than others, or, you know, something like stress, if you're susceptible to stress, and that can affect how your body is responding using something like a lubricant. So just know your body and experiment with lube. I always recommend trying a bunch of products out first before just, you know, getting a bottle and bringing it into the bedroom and not having used and experiment with it first.
Right. So the next question we have here, it's so easy to fall to the pressure of society's standards of sex. Porn and Hollywood will make us believe that you can reach an orgasm as a woman up to 5 times in one night. Even the concept of squirting has made its way into the bedroom. Is that even a real thing? Can the body do any of this?
So as far as the multiple orgasm point, yes, I feel like female bodies are able to have multiple orgasms. Women can actually have 10 different types of orgasms. So there are a lot of opportunities for orgasm, but it also shouldn't be the goal of sex. I think one important thing to remember about orgasm is it's a reflex, like a sneeze. So we don't want to focus on it or try to will an orgasm. Basically, an orgasm, in my opinion, is a side effect of good sex and pleasure. It means that if your body is primed up and you're responding to stimulation, it's going to happen. And because our bodies are more susceptible for multiple or multisensory orgasms, that's why it's important to have masturbation be a focus, so you know what parts of your body respond more to stimulation. Because that, you know, round two being painful, right away I'm thinking they're probably focusing primarily on intercourse, and some of these other areas are not the focus. So that might be why it's painful and that multisensory orgasm experience is not happening. And as far as squirting goes, that's also referred to as female ejaculation. That's definitely a real thing. And we actually have something called Skene's glands that release fluid through the urethra. So it comes through the same place that urine exits the body, but it is a clear fluid. It can be anywhere from a teaspoon to sometimes a cup of fluid, but it is not an abnormal thing at all. And it can be, you can train yourself how to ejaculate as a female, and some women do it naturally, and there's really no shame in it. It's a natural part of sexual response.
I feel like I'm learning so much about being a female right now.
That's exciting. You're going to go home and say, all right, I've got a lot of homework.
So this is a question I imagine you probably receive a lot during your sessions, but I got a lot of comments to have us discuss the evolution of sex through a relationship. So a few women messaged me about how inadequate they felt when they're sort of put in a position that reminds them of, you know, the sex when they first started dating, to the sex when they were married, and now to the sex, you know, post having children. You know, and some were voicing that they were uncomfortable with their bodies post-sex, or that their lack of sex drive made their partners feel a little bit low. Is this a common thing? And how do you typically recommend that, you know, people approach this topic?
Yes, it's very common and it's inevitable. Our sexuality, in my opinion, changes daily. And there are many factors that affect it: hormone levels, energy, what's going on in our day-to-day lives. And at the beginning of a relationship is the lust phase, and that biologically only lasts about 16 months. And when lust wears off, we move into what we call companionate love. And this is what we refer to as more of our familial intimacy. And this is where I hear a lot of couples say, we're like best friends. Great for intimacy, not great for romanticism or eroticism. So I think that it naturally evolves. But what we want to do is not compare every stage of our sexual evolution to the beginning of our relationship. Because if we remember the lusty phase, even though it may have sounded great and we're having a lot of sex, we probably weren't doing much but thinking about our partner all the time. And they used to call it a mental illness because it caused obsessive thinking, difficulty concentrating. So I think that we can be more accepting to some of these later stages. And I think the reality is when you're married with children, sex is different. And different doesn't mean better or worse. I think we need to be more accepting of some of these changes. And if you're uncomfortable with your body, I think that's a focus you want to have on improving that yourself, and that we don't want to rely so much on our partners to figure that out for us. I think you have to do that work to figure out what's getting in the way of feeling like you have a good body image. Or are you comparing yourself to others too much? Are you, you know, scrolling through social media and, you know, surrounded by unrealistic body ideals? And so I think sometimes identifying where that negativity is coming can be helpful. I think the last part is, you know, if you are dealing with a, you know, lack of desire or drive at a certain point in your relationship, I think talking about it with your partner and setting new expectations around sex. So I think what the biggest shift is that I encourage my couples to do is focus less on frequency and more on quality of sex. Because you may think that we need to be having sex, you know, every day, every other day, once a week, whatever it may be. But I think the focus or the too much focus on frequency can lead to feeling that, you know, even if that were to be achieved, the quality isn't there, the connection isn't there, and that one quality experience can make up for all of that lack of connection that you've been feeling. And it can also improve so many other concerns happening in your mental, emotional, and sexual health. So that's really my advice, is to set new realistic expectations and to focus on quality sexual interactions.
So the next question we have says, my partner and I are trying to have a baby, so it feels like we are actively having sex more so for her to try to get pregnant than for us to have fun. What's your recommendation for this period of our sex life and for us getting back into our groove?
This is a very common concern. I think, first of all, when you're trying to get pregnant, sex can feel very mechanical, especially if you are planning sex around ovulation and scheduling sex more frequently because of your desire to get pregnant. So I would say if that is your focus, try to still add in quality, connection, and intimacy so that it doesn't feel so mechanical. And to talk about it. I think sometimes couples are focusing so much on one thing that they forget to talk about how important it is to be able to validate one another's feelings around what's going on with their sex life, or that it's just put on the back burner, even though sex is what the focus is in order to get pregnant. I think it still becomes a disconnect between trying to get pregnant and your sex life together. So that would be my recommendation, is to try to make dates with each other, romance each other, like we talked about earlier, making it a priority to connect. And that's also going to help your fertility. So I think that's important, is emotional connection releases hormones in our body that help us feel that sense of bonding. And that's really important for sex and connection.
So I have a good one here. So my partner and I have been wanting to try anal sex, but I'm so nervous that there will be some sort of poop accident. How can I relax a little bit, and how common is this actually?
Yes, anal sex, the question everyone has, but no one wants to ask. I think, first of all, anal sex is something that requires education. There are certain lubricants you want to use. There's also safety, understanding you want to start slow and kind of build up. And also how to, you know, clean yourself out and prepare. You know, that can include things like enemas, making sure you're, you know, not eating spicy food before you're planning on anal sex. You know, these are things that can be, you know, small changes and things to be aware of before trying anal. I always recommend to start with fingers. Start with just, understanding what type of penetration you can tolerate before moving right into anal sex. with a partner. So it does require feeling relaxed, feeling comfortable in your body, and starting slow. So that would be my advice. And it's not very common where there are accidents of that sort, but I think education will definitely prevent that from happening.
So the next question is, I hate taking my shirt off during sex because I hate my stomach. However, my man likes to touch my breast. Do you have any recommendation for this happy medium and for both of us to feel comfortable slash get what we want?
Yes, this is a common one as well. I would say I would want you to look a little bit further into why you're having such a negative view towards your belly. I think this is a common one for females and males, actually. This is a place they avoid with touch. Sometimes it's because the way you're being touched is not what feels good. For example, if your partner is used to grabbing your breast, maybe they're grabbing your belly in a way that does make you feel more self-conscious. So it could be helpful to guide your partner towards a type of touch that feels comfortable. I also think it's important to really challenge these body image issues and think about where they're coming from. And I wouldn't avoid taking your clothes off during sex. I think that only perpetuates the problem around body image, but it may be important to just talk about it with your partner. And if he likes touching your breasts, I think maybe you can think about encouraging him to touch other areas of the body as well, so that you feel comfortable and that you're both getting what you want. Because I would also be curious to know, what feels good for her, and is she getting all the types of touch she wants as well, or is it only about his needs being met? And that can bring more focus towards how her body looks rather than her getting pleasure from that touch.
It's interesting to read through some of the questions, especially after the first one that I asked you, which was, how much does the mind play into the things that happen in the bedroom? But a lot of these questions are geared towards things that were a little bit more of an insecurity that we each possess. So it's interesting to read through these and think back to that first question, right? And how that can play into how we're enjoying it, how we're enjoying ourselves. So that's, I don't know, I'm having like a moment where I'm like, oh, wow, this is really all tied together.
And I don't know about you, but I can relate. I don't know if anybody else put on that quarantine 15, not feeling very cute. I can relate.
That's a common one. And I think these body ideals are so unrealistic. I always encourage women, even though you're feeling that way, to try to find a different message around your belly. Because if we're constantly saying, oh, I've gained weight, or I look fat, or I'm not attractive, I'm not sexy, we may say those things to ourselves 300 plus times a day, not even consciously aware of it. So it's starting to create a belief and emotional state based on those thoughts. So if we can change that, changing your thinking, to I love my curves, or my curves are sexy, or something different, that can help you overcome those body image issues and also normalize that our bodies change. Yes, we're all in a pandemic, and if gaining weight was the only thing we did, that was, I think we're doing pretty well. I think that it's not easy, and this is a very traumatic thing for many people, if not all of us. So I think we, people that are, we just want to normalize that. I think that helps overcome these body image issues that we all have, especially, not only women, men and women. I'm seeing more and more men come into my practice with issues around their body and, wanting plastic surgery or things to alter their body to fit an ideal that just isn't real. It's unrealistic, and it's a distorted image of how we feel our body should look and the perfection that we all have to face around our bodies.
Right. Hollywood has ruined everything.
Blame it on Hollywood. Yes, it's all your fault, Hollywood.
So this next one was actually more of a comment rather than a question, but I wanted to include it because I thought that you would really enjoy it. So someone messaged me saying that after the birth of, so I'll read it in her words. So after the birth of my first child, my lady parts changed dramatically due to the suturing post-birth. Because of that, sex became incredibly painful and my sex life with my husband was deeply affected. I struggled to speak to friends about it. So I'm messaging you to talk about this on the episode because I really want to make sure women feel more comfortable talking about sex post-baby. I was finally able to speak to my doctor when I had my second child and he made sure to be careful and suture with this in mind, and it made the world of a difference. But she was mentioning that she really struggled after the birth of her first child because she didn't even know, you know, to talk to her doctor and say, hey, careful, like, careful with my vagina, like, don't mess this up.
Yes, I'm so glad that this listener mentioned this because this is also extremely common in postpartum women. Sometimes they're not even really educated around the changes their body goes through. So they are not only dealing with all of the changes of being a new mother, but also what, like this listener mentioned, pain, discomfort, when is it okay for me to have sex, what's safe. And so I think that one, if you've gone through most women that have gone through natural childbirth, they have had some tearing. There are a lot of nerve endings in the genital area, throughout the pelvic floor area. So there is going to be a change not only in the way that your body is structured, but also the way all those nerve endings heal and reconnect post-baby. So and when your suture is healing. So I think that's important to know because some women will say, I used to be able to get aroused in this way, but now I don't. Sometimes it's just changed and maybe it's a little more to the left than it used to be or higher up than it used to be. So it's finding out what your response is post-baby and giving yourself some time to figure that out. And I think it is important to talk to your doctor about that, especially if there's pain. That can be important too. That may be your pelvic floor, the muscles in your pelvic floor area. There can be a lot of things that we would want to rule out before going forward with safe and comfortable sex.
And the next question that we have, sometimes when my boyfriend and I have sex, there are times more often than not where he can't finish. This makes me feel like I'm doing something wrong. Is this common and what can I do to combat my feelings of insecurity? I feel like I'm broken in not being able to pleasure my boyfriend.
Well, it's definitely not you, it's him. No, actually, here's what I say to this. You know, this is called delayed ejaculation. And the number one cause of that for males is their masturbation style. So sometimes they are masturbating with, for example, a dry hand, a very intense grip with masturbation. And the way that they are stimulating, you know, is very, very different from the experience of your body with vaginal stimulation. So I think that could be a big cause, is his style of masturbation. And also sometimes this can be caused by things like medication. So antidepressants can cause delayed ejaculation in some males. I think that would be something you would want to discuss openly to see if this is something that has happened or been the case situationally. That could mean that there's something coming up between the two of them in connection they might want to address, or if this has always been the case, there may be something that he can do to change his masturbation style to make it easier for him to experience ejaculation with partnered sex.
And my next question here. So my partner has intimacy issues and says she has trouble getting close to people in a sexual way. How can I be supportive and help her work through these issues?
That's great. You know, I think the first thing is to communicate about what this partner means around intimacy issues. Is it sex? Is it vulnerability and opening up and talking about what she really wants? And the trouble getting close to people, that's a common concern in intimate relationships. And sometimes that can be a result of early trauma or betrayal in past relationships. And if you can open up and talk about these issues, that can help as a first step towards being more supportive. I think sometimes it's difficult to talk about these things. Maybe you can encourage her to go to therapy, or maybe going to therapy together where you can have that third party help you both navigate these issues together would be a first step.
And I have one more question to add in here, and it's kind of a myth that I want you to debunk. So I was watching the Kardashians, and Kourtney or Kim were both talking about how they had the doctor, quote unquote, like sew them up an extra stitch. Is that a thing?
You know, I imagine it is, living here in Los Angeles. Absolutely. I'm sure it is, you know, and it's sort of a, you know, I think it encourages a certain unrealistic expectation around how our bodies should be around sex. And also this ideal of, you know, after childbirth, that we have to kind of go back to this sort of tight, unrealistic way of being. And that's why I think I'm very against things like vaginal rejuvenation and some of these procedures that encourage these negative ideals around a woman's sexual body. So it's definitely not unheard of, but I haven't actually worked with any women that have decided that was the way they want to go. But I have worked with women that have done things like labiaplasty and vaginal rejuvenation and some of these different, everything from Botox in the vaginal tissue and things that tighten and strengthen. And, you know, there's just a lot of, I think the cosmetic world is getting involved with these ideals on what women should, how women should feel and sexual ideals around their bodies. So I'm definitely not for it at all. I think that it just sends the wrong message for women.
That's a great point. Dr. Shannon, I wanted to give you a moment to just take the mic and let us know if there's anything we missed, anything that you want our listeners to keep in mind. I think so far, there's so many nuggets of knowledge that I didn't even know about being a woman that I just learned. So I'm eager to hear if there's anything else you want to share with our listeners.
I would say one, that since shame is so prevalent, to not have this expectation that we have to have it all figured out. I think that we're always learning about our sexuality. So whether we're learning now, I think now is always a good time. And I always tell my clients, you know, if you don't know where to start or what you need to know, that's a great place to start. You know, I often meet with people that will come in and say, I don't know what I need to know or what my goals are. I just know I need to be here. And I always think that that's where the journey begins. So, you know, just that there are a lot of ways to access good material. You have experts like myself. There are, you know, podcasts like your podcast where you're providing this great information for people. So I think even if you need to ask anonymously, there's a lot of forms where you can do that. So it just starts with asking the questions and getting the right information. So I would say I would really encourage people to do that and to not feel any shame around it. And if you're feeling that or you have that question, I'm sure there's someone out there that has that same question as well. So you're not alone, and it can change your entire experience with sex. So I would say, you know, just really try to think about sex as much more than something we do. It's creating experiences, and we never age in our sexuality. So if you're not enjoying it now, just focus on finding a way to address these concerns so you can enjoy it all the way until, you know, throughout your entire life.
Thank you so much for coming on for the final installment of Love Chat. Bianca, I'll let you say your goodbyes.
Yes, thank you for joining us. That was very insightful. And again, I feel like there's all these questions that people have. Most likely, if you have them, there's plenty of other people out there that do too. I learned a lot. I hope we answered everybody's questions today. And please feel free to reach out for a consultation. You never know if you need to chat with Dr. Shannon and see what's going on at home in the bedroom and work those kinks out. Perfect time to do it. We have all the time in the world with COVID, so book a call.
Definitely. Thank you so much for having me.